Okay. Well, I'm sitting down because that's a good way to teach. And I didn't see that big thing to stand up and lean against, so I'm sitting down. And I'm about to stand up because one of the things we do at Narcisse is we receive the kingdom of heaven every Shabbat morning. Now, what does that mean, to receive the kingdom of heaven? You've all heard of Rabbi Gamliel, yes? Gamaliel? He was the teacher of Paul. And he and his grandson, probably the story deals with the grandson. We have a story, first it's recorded in the Mishnah, and it says that he taught his disciples. Well, it was even before then, there was a discussion about reciting the Shema, and it talks about it as receiving the kingdom of heaven. And every morning and every evening in antiquity, people would receive the kingdom of heaven by reciting the Shema. To receive Malchut Shemaim means to let God personally rule you. We receive Malchut Shamayim. We receive the kingdom of heaven. And so there was a discussion, and Gamliel was teaching his disciples, and he said, on your wedding night, you don't need to recite the Shema. And he got married. And the next morning, his disciples come to him and said, we heard you. They heard him? Yeah. We heard you reciting the Shema on your wedding night. How do you explain that? And he said, I would not want to put off the receiving the kingdom of heaven for one moment. So even on my wedding night, I recited the Shema. And so, Jesus, when he was teaching, someone asked him, What is the big commandment? How do we inherit eternal life? And so Jesus turns to him and he says, well, what is written? What is written in Torah? How do you read? And he says, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your strength, with all your soul, with all your strength. And you shall love your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus said, yes, you've answered well. Because he just recited the Shema. He just said, you have to have a personal relationship with God. And Jesus said, yes. So, you're all invited to stand up and to affirm receiving the kingdom of heaven by reciting the Shema. We will sing just the first few words. Shema, Shema Israel, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Ehad. Ve'ahavta et Adonai Elohecha, bechol levavcha, uvechol nafshecha, uvechol meodecha. Ve'hayu הדברים האלה אשר אנוכי מצווך היום על לבביך ושיננתם לבניך ודיברת בם בשבתך בביתך ובלכתך בדרך ובשוכבך ובקומך וקשרתם לאות על ידיך והיו לטוטפות בין עיניך וכתבתם על מזוזות ביתך ובשעריך, ואהבת לרעך כמוך. Okay. You may sit down. So, My name is Randall Booth, and I'm father of Sharona. And we've been here at Narcisse. Okay. And we've been here at Narcisse for over 40 years, off and on. We took a 20-year hiatus where we were in Africa. But we met David and Josa. I'm very glad to see you here this morning. And not very many others were here back in the early 70s. Anyway, this past week I was also with a group of people who, there was a tour for people who wanted to pray for and support a new school that is starting that will have 8 months of immersion where they will be studying biblical Hebrew. These are people coming from around the world, especially those who want to work in Bible translation. They will be studying biblical Hebrew, and they'll be doing it in Hebrew. That is something unique. The church doesn't have a school like that anywhere in the world. They'll spend 8.5 months immersed in Hebrew. It's exciting. And so anyway, that I was privileged to be part of that, and also for the school that will start in, I guess, mid-June. This morning I was happy. We came. I got to walk across town and participate in the Bible study. For those of you that don't know, there's a Bible study. It's currently following a triennial reading of the Torah. And this morning they were studying the parasha that dealt with the garments of the high priest. And Gary didn't know it. He asked me about 6 weeks ago if I would speak this week. So I said yes, and I had prepared something, and I didn't know they would be reading the parasha of the high priest garments. But I will be talking about some other garments also today. So it was a very unique tie-in. Anyway, for those of you that don't know about the Bible study, it is a blessing. And it also is something unique. So, I know what's... So I'm allowed to wear glasses. Hold on a minute. I would like to read a text this morning, and it will serve as the basis for what we will be talking about and studying. I think it's very important for us, especially today. The world is just going crazy, and sometimes you need to be reminded of where you stand and how you can stand when the world around you is going crazy. So I'm going to read to you from Ephesians 6. This is the letter of Paul to the Ephesians, chapter 6. I'll read 10 through, I believe it's 20, yes. Finally, be strong in the Lord and in His mighty power. Put on the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. Therefore, put on the full armor of God, so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground, and after you have done everything, to stand. Stand firm, then, with the belt of truth, buckled around your waist, with the breastplate of righteousness in place, and with your feet fitted with the readiness that comes from the gospel of peace. In addition to all this, take up the shield of faith, with which you can extinguish all the flaming arrows of the evil one. Take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. And pray in the Spirit on all occasions with all kinds of prayers and requests. With this in mind, be alert and always keep on praying for all the saints. And pray also for me, that whenever I open my mouth, words may be given me so that I will fearlessly make known the mystery of the gospel, for which I am an ambassador in chains. Pray that I may declare it fearlessly as I should. Okay. So what did we read about? We read about putting on these different pieces of warfare, being dressed for warfare. And Christians have often referred to this chapter when they have talked about something that they might call spiritual warfare. And so we'll be talking about spiritual warfare as Paul sees it. But we're only going to get started a little bit, because this is the kind of text that you could do a whole series on. We'll just take one piece. But we'll look at spiritual warfare as Paul sees it. We'll discuss the metaphor spiritual warfare. We'll touch a bit on binding and loosing. Then we'll come back to the text and an issue of importance in today's world. Now, let me back up a bit. Spiritual warfare. Is spiritual warfare a real warfare with swords and military force, or is it spiritual, non-physical, referring to a spiritual struggle against evil? This is not a trivial question. And the reason it isn't is because, especially today, there are people that are trying to make everything equivalent. Sort of a moral equivalence just all across the world. People want to embrace the whole world and treat it equally, you might say. And so, some religions, more particularly one, have had warfare as spiritual, as being physical warfare, as being something from God or good. Now, there are traditions of this. We have Joshua being led into the land of Canaan. And that was a real warfare. And we have David uniting the country. And there were battles all through the history of Israel. And that was a physical warfare, but not really a spiritual warfare. Certainly not the spiritual warfare that is being talked about here by Paul. And we had a group that started a religion in Arabia. And they were having a warfare, and some people even wanted to leave. The leader died, and so some of them said, okay, fine, now we're leaving. And so the first act of that new history was to get rid of those that wanted to leave, the so-called war of apostasy. And we are now told by spokesmen, they only defend themselves, so don't worry. So they defended themselves, that warfare defended themselves into Syria, Persia, Egypt, North Africa, Spain, France, defended themselves. Okay, so that's not what we're talking about when we say spiritual warfare. And I say that to make it clear, because there are people that want to say, hey, you Christians, doesn't your text talk about spiritual warfare? So aren't we going to be afraid of you? So let's be very clear. This spiritual warfare is a metaphor. It is not against flesh and blood. It has nothing to do with physical violence. And if you don't believe that, or you want it somehow to be equal, then go look at the history. Look at what Paul, he's in chains. Is he leading an army against Rome? No, he is in chains. And the first 300 years, this new movement, this Christian movement spread out all over the world. And did they have swords? Well, they probably did when they were on a journey. People wore swords back then. But the gospel spread as a message. There was no army. There were no battles. Physical battles. So what is Paul talking about here? He is using a metaphor. So I guess that's my point one. Spiritual warfare in the New Testament is a metaphor. And it should not and cannot be confused with actual physical warfare. Now we're going to go on to a second thing. Once we get the point that it's spiritual, many times Christians have linked up spiritual warfare. They say, we're being called, we have struggles against evil forces, powers in the high places. So, we have looked for passages, and one of the passages that's become famous maybe in the last century has been binding and loosing. And many people think of binding and loosing as spiritual warfare. And it is. But not the way people might think. Because what has happened in some churches is they say, oh, well, we're going to bind evil forces. We're going to pray a prayer that will bind up evil forces, and we're going to pray a prayer that will loose and release God's blessing. And God will answer those prayers because He does want to release blessings on people. But that is not what binding and loosing means. And yet it is part of spiritual warfare. What is binding and loosing? When Jesus turned to His disciples and He says, in Matthew 18, He says, I'm giving you the authority to bind and to loose. He didn't explain what it meant because they already knew. Everybody knew that idiom, right? This is a common idiom. You all know it. Well, they did in the first century. To bind means to forbid. And to loose means to permit. And we've got this thousands of times in rabbinic literature. They would discuss, how should we live? What is the right way to live before God? And they would say, oh, well, you certainly don't take a walk from here to Mevaseret or to Tel Aviv. That's too far. That would break the Shabbat. That's forbidden. And they would say, well, it's permitted to go, and they would discuss. So how far is permitted? And they would discuss different things. They came up with various solutions. And they said, this is permitted. They bound, and they permitted. Now, later in the book of Hebrews, we hear that maturity, spiritual maturity, as people grow, they have to learn to do what is right and to abstain from what is wrong. Spiritual maturity. It's not easy. Do you think it's always easy to know what is right and what is wrong? Okay, if you think it is, then I'll just say, what in the world is going on in our world today? We have chaos in North America. What is true? What is happening? Many here are Americans. What is happening in the government? The rest of the world is watching with their mouths open also. What is going on? Is it easy to know what is true and false, what is right, what is wrong? It is not easy. It's difficult. We had to let the children out because with the children, we just tell them, don't do this. That's easy. When you're a child, right and wrong is pretty easy. When you get up to be an adult, it is a challenge. So binding and loosing, that's part of the calling that Jesus gave the church. It's part of maturity. It's part of growing. You grow in it. It's part of spiritual warfare, but we're not going to be talking about that today either. We're going to be going on. That was point two. Binding and loosing is dealing with how to find out what is right and what is wrong. But I'm going to come back to our text. And we will start reading about the spiritual warfare that Paul talks about. Not against flesh and blood. So how did he do it? Is it powerful prayers of supernatural power that he brings down to a situation? When you say spiritual warfare, people sometimes imagine that kind of thing. So let's start reading what he says to do. He says, put on the full armor of God that you can stand when the evil day comes. Stand, here he's now going to verse 14. He now is going to describe this. Stand firm then with the belt of truth buckled around your waist. Truth. Spiritual warfare. Imagine that. Spiritual warfare starts with truth. It is a foundation. It's even a dangerous foundation. I fully believe truth is the foundation that we want. Anyone who says they love God, they have to love the truth. Anyone who says they love God, they have to be willing to declare themselves a sinner. If we say we have no sin, we deceive ourselves. So truth is very important. And it is the foundation for everything that follows that Paul is talking about here. Without truth, there can be no righteousness. Without truth, there is no good news. There is no gospel. Without truth, your faith will be distorted. We will not have salvation, and we will not have the Word of God without truth. All of these are founded on truth. But I said it was dangerous. Truth is dangerous? It is. There's something hidden in truth. Truth here is listed as a belt. I like to think of that as something defensive. You can attack people with truth. You can hurt people with truth. And with a half-truth, you can blind yourself from further truth. And that's where the danger comes. In order to put on truth, in order to embrace truth, we must have humility. Truth calls for humility. Teacher, can you prove that? Truth demands humility, absolutely, from this book. In Ephesians chapter 2, 1 and 2, it talks about all believers. We had formerly been controlled by sin and the evil powers of the world. Okay? So we were controlled by sin. Any believer in Yeshua has had to humble themselves. They have had to step from that world of sin and evil, controlled by falsehoods, not knowing the truth, and we have to come to truth. That means acknowledging that we were wrong. And it doesn't just stop when we become a believer in Yeshua. Acknowledging faults, this is part of the nature of humility. And what did the Lord say about correcting evil? He said, be careful that the little piece in your eye, be careful that the little piece you see in someone's eye is not a log in your own eye. That you may have a log in your eye while you're trying to correct something else. This is a teaching that has no time limit. Yes, the very foundation of spiritual warfare is truth. But if we want our foundation to be truth, we will learn humility. Because only with humility will our truth grow. So, I thought a little bit more about truth. Truth does not care about itself. It stands for what is correct. Now, evil, on the other hand, does not care about truth. It only cares about itself. Evil will use fact or falsehood to promote evil. A person cannot come to the truth unless they are humble. They may think they have the truth, but if it is mixed with pride, the pride can block someone from the truth. So, I'm going to give you the short version. I have a nice example of a story. Maybe if someone is interested, I had an interesting encounter this week discussing a point, whether it was true or not. And I was saying, Mishmaujud, and he was saying, Maujud, Mishmaujud, Maujud. One of us was right, one of us was wrong. Ask me about it later. Anyway, we want to live in an age where people mock the very idea of truth. That's why I said it was so important. Because we have slipped into an age that many call postmodern. Truth is what you fashion it to be.
Well,
people mock the idea of truth. It is the foundation of the gospel. We cannot have the gospel if we do not have the truth. We cannot say Jesus was crucified, Jesus was not crucified. The gospel doesn't work that way. He was crucified. He rose from the dead. Now, questioning whether there can be truth is not new to humans. Not new to humans. We can go all the way back to Genesis 3. Did God say? Questioning truth. Is there really something true there? We heard it in the trial of Jesus. Pilate, the Roman governor, turns to Jesus. He says, "What is truth?" Well, if we will be humble and let God lead us into truth, we will be able to speak and we will grow and we can be His messengers based on a foundation of truth. And then we will be following what may have been an answer to one of the Passover questions. The Last Supper was a Passover supper. This is next month's sermon when we have Pesach. And you know, during Pesach, there are many questions given. And one of the questions that was given, "Show us the way to the Father." And Yeshua said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me." The way, the truth, and the life. So, if we can learn humility, we can have a foundation of truth laid on us, and we can be witnesses to the Lord. Shabbat Shalom.